Our community of fetish creators is at the heart of everything we do at Clips for Sale. Together, we'll help you elevate your sales and brand to new heights. Join C4S.com today and unlock the full potential of your brand and build your fetish fan base. Because at Clips for Sale, we believe that community is the key to your success. The letter C, number 4, letter S.com. C4S.com.
The following is a presentation of Dating Kinky, built by kinksters, for kinksters, poly, queer, trans folk, and anyone not quite vanilla. And it's free.
Welcome in. We've saved a special space just for you. We've saved a space where you can allow yourself to be who you have always dreamed to be. One without apologies for who you are, and one without fear. One where you can simply be authentically you. The show is called Authentically Kinky, and it is presented by Dating Kinky and is powered by Clips for Sale. Your host is John, also known as Hi There Catsuit, and each week they visit with kink and fetish personalities to bring you their stories. Now go to that safe space in your mind and meet someone who's just like you, who has lived their life finding out why they are who they are and living a life that is authentically kinky.
Jesse Sage is a Pittsburgh-based sex worker and writer. She's a columnist at the Pittsburgh City Paper, and her other writing has appeared in the Washington Post, the Daily Beast, Vice, BuzzFeed, Men's Health, Hustler, The Dough, Kinkly, Pulp Magazine, and many more, including Trist. And she's an amazing advocate for sex workers. Currently, she hosts a show called When We're Not Hustling, available on your favorite podcast platform. Jesse Sage, our guest on Authentically Kinky.
The genesis of the story always begins with memorable firsts, and that is how we start our show each and every time. This is The First Five, proudly presented by KinksterMerch.com.
First time you realized that hustling wasn't a bad thing?
Oh, that's a good question. I feel like I learned that as a sex worker, that I was in academia before I was a sex worker. And in academia, you are, especially what I did philosophy, and you were very discouraged from talking about money or from wanting money. It's this like long tradition of people who didn't have to work for a living. And I am not one of those people. I started working when I was really young, and that was always difficult for me. And when I got into sex work in my mid-30s, one of the things that I loved about it is that there's this like sex worker mantra, you know, fuck you, pay me. And that felt abrasive to me when I first heard it. But I almost needed it to be that abrasive to kind of shake me out of that that mindset of something wrong with you if you advocate for yourself, if you value your services, if you want to be paid what you're worth. And I spent a lot of time having to it took me a little while to internalize that. And now I feel like very, very grateful for that.
You remember the first thing you got paid for?
The first ever? Mm-hmm. Babysitting. I would say the first thing I got paid for was babysitting. I'm an oldest daughter.
Was that a hustle?
Is babysitting a hustle? Not when you do it for your parents, because you don't have much of a choice. But yeah, I mean, I think I did a lot of a lot of that when I was much younger and started early, like 11, 12. And you know, it's funny to me now as a parent, like I wouldn't hire an 11-year-old, but I was being hired when I was 11. And yeah, I think that's a hustle. It's a unconventional job. And I feel like most unconventional gig jobs, and babysitting is a gig job, those are all hustles.
What was your first sex gig job?
The first thing I ever did was camming. I did a cam show with my partner, and they had done it before me, and I didn't know that much about it when I did it for the first time. And then we turned on our, I talked to them about it because I was curious what they were doing on there. And then I told them I wanted to do it with them. And we turned a cam on Chatterbait. We set up a couple account and went on Chatterbait, and I hated it. I am not a cammer. Camming is not my thing, but that was the first thing I tried.
When was the first time you were able to look at a picture and say, this is authentically me?
Oh, that's a good question. Wow, I don't know if I've ever really thought about that before. I'm thinking about this picture that I have of me holding my little son. He was an infant and he was my second kid, but I remember this picture in particular. And he was sitting on my shoulder and I looked over at the camera and you could see his little baby face and you could see my face. And we both looked like beautiful, like a mom and her infant baby. But I also could see in my face that I was very tired, like looking at it from, you know, like tired in the way that you're exhausted when you have a tiny baby. And I remember thinking like, that is a capture, that is a moment in time that feels very real. I remember that. So I think that, I mean, I'm sure there's other pictures before that, but that's the first thing I thought of.
You have a new podcast that is out now. When was the first time you ever did a podcast and how did you feel doing it?
The first one we did, I did, was Peep Show Podcast with my partner. We ran it from 2017 until 2021, I guess. And not every week, 100 episodes over that period of time, but pretty consistently. And the first episode we did, we had a friend over who talked about bisexuality, who is a journalist that wrote on bisexuality. And we had her on because she was our friend and agreed to do it, even though we had no podcast experience. We didn't know how to record. And I remember sitting in a triangle in our bedroom around a microphone and not having any idea what we were doing. And it's embarrassing to me now to go back and listen to like episodes 1 through 20 to hear how bad they were. But we learned along the way. And sometimes when people would say, oh, I started your podcast, I listened to episode 1, I'm like, why did you start at 1? Like, start at 50 when we got a groove going. But a lot of people are like, it's kind of fun to hear the development too. So yeah, but I remember sitting in our bedroom around one microphone.
We're going to do some more hustling when we're not hustling. That is the new name of the new podcast for Jesse Sage. And we'll talk about that and a lot more when we come back on Authentically Kinky. We're presented by Dating Kinky and powered by Clips for Sale.
Visit our Authentically Kinky store at kinkstermerch.com. You can find empowering designs for all you authentically kinky people, as well as an entire range of designs for all the kinksters in your life, all at kinkstermerch.com. Authentically Kinky is on the web at authenticallykinky.com. You can find us on social media on X and FetLife at AuthKinkyPod, and on Instagram and YouTube at Authentically Kinky Podcast.
Now, for Clips for Sale, here's fetish creator Liz River.
As a fetish creator myself, I know there are a lot of options to sell my content. But when it comes to a platform that I trust and that works for me, Clips for Sale has always been number one. With reliable payouts, content protection, chargeback forgiveness, and great internal traffic, I know that my content is being seen by the right customers because Clips for Sale invests in marketing to make sure that I succeed. It's time to join a community that cares about fetish creators at C4S.com. The letter C, number four, letter S.com. C4S.com.
This is the National Coalition for Sexual Freedom. We're celebrating our 25th anniversary this year. That's 25 years of fighting for your rights. NCSF got the American Psychiatric Association to change their diagnostic manual so kinky people can no longer be called sick just because of how we like to have sex. And now we've gotten the American Law Institute to create a legal framework for consent to kink called explicit prior permission. Please join our coalition. We're just like you, kinky and polyamorous volunteers who are making these great changes, and you can help.
For more information, visit ncsfreedom.org.
This is Authentically Kinky, presented by Dating Kinky and powered by Clips for Sale, with special thanks to our partners, FetishCon, Master of Music, Kinkster Merch, Medusa Media Management, Hito Gato, and the Adventures of Ultra Girl. Now, let's get back to John and their guests on Authentically Kinky, presented by Dating Kinky and powered by Clips for Sale.
Welcome back to Authentically Kinky, joined by Jesse Sage from Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is just an amazing city to me, and an amazingly open city when it comes to the people that I know that are kinky or sex positive from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is the city like that?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I do think that it's funny because today, if you just look at my day today, I had lunch with a dominatrix and a friend of mine who was actually a guest on my new podcast. And then after that, I had coffee with a rigger. I mean, I would say my world is, it's like you always see the people who are around you, but yeah, I mean, there's a fair number of sex workers. There is a sex club that's pretty popular that isn't just a swinger club. It's a swinger club, but it also has like Freaky Friday nights that are more like kink nights. It has educational events. It has like rope tying events. It has all of these themed parties. And so that's growing in prominence and a lot of people are going to that. I was just rehired back at, I mean, after not doing this for a while because of COVID, but to start up my sex column again at the Pittsburgh City Paper. And so I am really excited about that. My first piece comes out tomorrow, and that piece is on Shibari. And I was actually tied up by one of the people. I did a suspension, which was amazing. Like, I've never done that before. And I didn't even think I would like it. And it turns out that I was wrong about that. And I'm happy to be wrong about that. And I wrote about that. I wrote about my experience of being tied up and doing a suspension. And so I feel like the fact that the Alt Weekly of the paper hires an out sex worker to talk about my experiences in like kink and sex work, bodes well for like the openness of the city. I mean, we have a swap chapter here. The Sex Worker Outreach Project, for people who don't know what that is. I would say that there is a fair number of people who are in different sex positive communities here.
When did you discover that you are authentically kinky?
You know, I don't know the answer to that question because I think that's like not a thing that I heavily identify with, but I think so many things that are like very normal, other people think are kinky. I think that, I don't know, probably in my 30s, but I think that it just was like a process that evolved. And the more that I was exposed to, the more that I felt comfortable. And I'm just a fairly, and I guess maybe this is the thing, like I'm a fairly sexually open person and like to experience a lot of things. And that never feels like taboo to me in a way that it does to a lot of people. It just feels like part of sex and exploration. So yeah, I don't think about it that much, but I just feel like I do a lot of things that other people find kinky that I'm just like, yeah, that's just sex.
You talk a lot about changes in your mid-30s. Mm-hmm. Was the Jesse Sage before mid-30s and Jesse Sage after mid-30s so different?
Yes. I mean, there was no Jesse Sage before mid-30s, so there's that. No. I became that. I mean, I don't think that I'm fundamentally different as a person, but my whole life is different. So I do talk a lot about this. In my mid-30s, I left a PhD program and a long-term marriage to my high school sweetheart within a year of each other. And when I did that, everything about my life changed. And I feel like, you know, my ex and I weren't like monogamous or anything. We had like an open relationship and we were pretty open people, but we still lived a fairly conventional life. That was like the side of our very regular life. And I feel like what happened when I left my like career that I was working toward and left that marriage and became like a divorced woman who had to restart my life all over again is that I stopped trying to live a life that I thought that I was supposed to live. And there was something that was very, very freeing about that. And the fact that I didn't have a plan. I wasn't like, okay, I'm going to now like leave this PhD program and do something else. I just left. And the same thing with my marriage. I just was like, I can't do this anymore. And I'm going to go get an apartment and do something else. And I feel like that was this huge change in my life where I ended up, getting in a new relationship that looked very different. Starting camming, like I said, with my partner, deciding I didn't like that and going into, I mean, now I work in full service, but I used to do a lot of online stuff. Developing a whole brand around that, starting a writing career in public writing, podcasting. Like I became a public figure in sex work, and that was never in my wildest imagination something that was going to happen. So yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm the same person, but I feel like my life looks radically different.
Was there ever an inkling when you were younger that that may be what you end up doing?
No. I mean, I thought I was going to be a writer. I did think that I was going to be a writer, and I am a writer. So like that is the only through thread through all of this. Although I have to say that looking back on it now, it all makes sense. It's like a clear trajectory in the sense that I went into philosophy and then I also did a theology degree because I was very interested in like the deep questions. And then when I went back to philosophy and was doing that, I was working on a feminist philosophy and I was looking specifically at like embodiment. And so it was very like body focused, which is why I wasn't doing very well. And I mean, I was doing fine, but why philosophy was a bad fit because people were like, we don't do the body, we do the mind. And I was like, okay, but, you know, so I was really interested in that. And then I became a doula, and did a lot of, birth assistance and was working with pregnant women. And, but you can't make a living really doing that. It was terrible money and terrible hours because you're on birth schedules. So that wasn't feasible with my kids after a while, but I got all of that training that was really important to me about how to be there with people in very vulnerable moments. So I felt like the feminist philosophy I was doing led into this embodied doula work that I was doing. And then I was so comfortable walking into these like intimate spaces that it it doesn't seem weird to me now that I'm a sex worker, because to me, being a sex worker feels very much like that, like entering, walking into a room with a stranger and figuring out what they want and need very quickly, and using like your own body to provide that feels like really similar to other work that I've done. And so I do feel like there's a through line where it makes sense now, but I didn't know that that was the direction that it was going in.
Being in feminist philosophy, mm-hmm. and what I know about you is that you are the most amazing advocate I've come across, because you are constantly trying to raise up people who many are trying to put down. Is that a heavy burden, or is that something that just energizes you?
Both. I think both. You know, it's really interesting, because that was kind of one of the motivations for my new show. And my new show is When We're Not Hustling. And the tagline for that is sex workers talking about everything but, like, joke on everything but like yeah,
low on the uptake, but I got it.
But I really, the reason that I wanted to do that show was in part because I have spent the last 10 years talking about sex worker issues, trying to humanize sex work, trying to talk about why it is that our issues matter, why people should care about our issues. And I still feel so strongly about that. And that's what we did in Peep Show for 5 years. And I've done some other projects where I did the exact same thing. And that has been so important to me, and it is still so important to me. But then I also started to feel like, okay, but we've been having these conversations and people aren't really listening. And we're preaching to the choir. The people who care about sex work is listening to us, and the other people don't care at all. And so what I wanted to do with my new show was to talk to sex workers, but to talk to them about the other things that were happening in their life. Like, we can only talk about FOSTA-SESTA so many times. I mean, it's important. It's important every single time we talk about it, but we have other things happening too. We also have hobbies and interests and families. And so I decided that I was going to host a show instead where sex workers just got to be people, but we had, I feel such a sense of kinship with sex workers. Like, they are my people. And I love sex workers, but I want to know sex workers as people too, not like, I don't want to just talk shop all the time, which is what we end up doing, especially when the work that you're doing is so heavily criminalized and so heavily stigmatized that it narrows your world into where you can't talk to other people. So you only talk to each other, but you only talk to each other about work because that's your point of connection. So what I'm really trying to do is open up that space and say, like, okay, sex workers are my people. I want you guys to see how amazing these people are. But also, like, I want to talk about religious backgrounds, and I want to talk about gardening, and I want to talk about, other sorts of organizing that people are doing. And I have somebody coming on soon to talk about poly parenting. And then I have somebody coming on that's going to be talking about hitchhiking across the United States. And so I feel deeply called to that sort of work. I feel like it can start to feel heavy, and that's not a reason to stop doing it, but it may be a reason to, for periods of time, reframe what we're doing, because I think we can build each other up in a lot of different ways. And so that's what I've been working to do with this new show.
It is amazing that in the over 200 episodes we've done now,
mm-hmm.
it's always about the story. It's not about the actions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I love when I get to the end of an episode and a pro-dom will go to me and say, "You didn't ask me the questions that everybody else does."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Because everybody else has asked them. Why would I want to ask them again?"
Right. That's how I feel about my show. Is like, I don't, I don't want to ask somebody why they got into sex work. Like, this is the question I keep getting asked over and over. I want to ask something else.
Well, the beautiful thing about doing what we do is we can lift up people through our words and through theirs.
Yeah.
Do you have a particular memory of somebody who came on one of your podcasts or was the subject of one of your writings that you absolutely know you made a difference in allowing them to see each other, see themselves much differently?
Yes. I mean, I'm thinking through a lot of things. I'll tell you, I have a show dropping and it is an interview with my mother. And, yeah, I had her on the show and that was an amazing experience for both of us because when she found out I was a sex worker, it was really hard on our relationship. And by really hard, I mean, we didn't talk for 2 years and then for several years after that, we talked, but very superficially. Like, I gave her updates on how the kids are doing because we tiptoed around the work that I do. And I write for and it's really hard when you have like a career that you're working on to like pretend that it doesn't exist and be like, oh yeah, I'm a housewife. I mean, I didn't say I was a housewife, but that's how I had to pretend, you know, because it was this black box that we couldn't really touch without it being a problem. And so I write for Trist, the platform, and they assigned me an article that was like, the title of it was, so you just found out your adult child is a sex worker. And when I saw that assignment, I was like, oh God, like this is a terrible assignment for me because things went really south with my own mom. But then I started to think about it and I was like, okay, but it's been years now. And what if I gave her a chance to have a conversation about it? And so I reached out to her on text because I was being chicken. And I was like, mom, I got this assignment. You can say no, I won't be offended, but what would you be interested in having me interview you? Would you talk to me about your feelings? And I was afraid to ask her about it because I didn't really want her to tell me that I hurt her. But then I started to think like, yeah, but I already know that. So like, what's the worst that can happen? You know, like that's a truth that I know. So maybe we could actually get into it and talk about it at this point. And it was a really lovely experience because she talked to me. She was like, I'm ready for this. She responded right away. And she's like, I'm ready. I want to do this. And I talked to her for an hour and I recorded it. And I only recorded it for transcripts so I could write the article and get her quotes. But then I listened back to it and I was like, oh no, this needs to be a podcast. Like people should hear this conversation because it's a conversation about how you shift your relationship with your kids when they become adults, which is important to me because I have kids now that are adults. Like two of my kids are adults now. And so I realized that the conversation was about sex work, but it was also about just how to love somebody who makes different choices than what you would make. And I transcribed all of that. I wrote the article. It's not out yet, but it will be. And then I sent her the interview. And I think, and what she said to me when she started it is she said that when she found out, she went and read a lot everywhere. And the only articles she could find were, it's not a big deal. I love my kid unconditionally because those are the people who felt comfortable talking about it. And she said, it wasn't helpful to her. She wanted to see something like, actually, I'm not happy about this. And like, where do you go from there? Like, how do you move on? And so I think that my work in podcasting and writing gave both of us a space, like kind of almost a neutral safe space to have a conversation that we didn't know how to approach otherwise. And she talked a lot about where she was coming from and second wave feminism and growing up in the 70s with Gloria Steinem and a lot of anti-sex work people and how much that influenced her and the idea that she's like, we fought so hard so that we don't have to suck dick for a living. You know, and she says this, it's my mom quote.
Things I haven't heard my mom say for 200, Alex.
And so But she said, and so when she listened back to it, because I was like, can I, you know, play this? Is this okay for me to put out into the world? I feel like she told me that it's something that she really wished she could have heard. And when she was at the height of not understanding why I made the choices that I made. And I asked her, I was like, well, has your opinion changed? Or is it that you've just kind of gotten over it, you know, and just decided to live with it? And she's like, no, actually, my opinion of sex workers changed over the time. And then she said, and I love this, she said something like, they're part of society, just let them live. And I was like, oh my God, Mom, you've come a long way.
Wow.
So I feel like that's the most personal because it's my mom, but I feel like we really turned a corner, and that it was like this platform that allowed us or gave us space to talk about how we feel in a way that wasn't there was actually not a lot of, you would think that a podcast or something like that would be high pressure, but it felt like less high pressure than like staring at each other in a personal conversation, you know?
I remember when Lady Vi, Satanatrix, was on the show and was able to, for the only time in her life, because of the way the court system went through, was able to tell the story of an incident in New Orleans that involved a church and a priest, and it became headlines all over the country.
Oh, wow.
And she was finally able to give her side of things. We hit that amazing spot where the lawyer said, go ahead and do it. And before the judge said, you can't do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And first of all, her trusting me with that conversation, I was so honored.
Right.
But the most beautiful thing that came from that, other than allowing her to have her voice, was getting to know her on a more personal basis.
Mm-hmm.
And she wrote me later and said, Catsuit, I don't know how to explain this, but my mom listened to the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And for the first time, I think she finally understood me.
Oh, that's so lovely.
I think there's a lot of misunderstanding.
Mm-hmm.
With people that don't realize that we make choices that allow us to be our authentic self. That's the mm-hmm. one of the reasons I changed the podcast to Authentically Kinky.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's because it's the way we choose to live, not to thumb our noses at anybody else, but because this is what allows us to be the people that we want to be.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I asked my mom, when I interviewed her, I was like, okay, so I feel like our relationship is like turning a corner right now. What kind of relationship is it that you want to have? And her response was a relationship in which we can both be our authentic selves, where we can come as the people that we are. And that's, you know, when you asked me earlier, if the pre-Jesse Sage and the now Jesse Sage are the same, I think that, you know, a good answer to that would be that, like, when I stopped trying to fit into what I thought I was supposed to be doing and just decided, like, fuck it, I'm going to live how I want to live, and nothing, the world didn't fall apart. You know, I just got to be myself, and the people that I attracted and brought into my world were people that understood me as me. Like, there's something so freeing about that.
I have had a life full of many stories. I've reinvented myself many times,
mm-hmm.
from sportscaster to pro wrestling announcer to roller derby announcer to improviser. Where I've worn all these hats and had all these different names.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then when I, quote, became Catsuit, I started seeing a different side of myself.
Mm-hmm.
It actually led itself to a gender conundrum or gender realization that it wasn't about body dysmorphia. It was all about the way I was thinking.
Yeah. That's so interesting. Yeah. Do you feel like the cat suit allowed, like, okay, my family thinks I'm ridiculous because I think, and I know this isn't true because it makes no sense at all, that dogs are males and cats are female.
Like, I can see that.
So yes. My cat is male, but I call my cat she all the time because, like, that does not stick in my head. I'm like, that doesn't make sense, right? This is my friend cat who's a female. So I say that because do you feel like embracing like cat suit or something that has to do with cats, like, allows for a side of femininity, or does it feel different than that to you?
I think the cat suit does put some femininity there.
Mm-hmm.
It also doesn't hide a lot, mm-hmm. but allows me to hide totally.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Say more about that.
I am not an exhibitionist at all.
Mm-hmm.
And when I see others, I would rather have a person who leaves things to the imagination rather than seeing a naked body.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I've never been comfortable with naked bodies. I don't know why.
Yeah, yeah.
Take me to a strip club and I'm looking at the waitresses who are nicely dressed. And I will remember, and I think I've told this story before. I took a pro wrestler to a strip club because he had to see Barbara Dare was her name.
Okay.
And this was back in 1991.
Okay.
And she had this famous shower show that she did across the country. It was the famous Barbara Dare shower show. And he was like, "You got to take me to see her." I went, "I'll make a deal with you. Yeah, buy me dinner."
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have to buy me drinks because I don't drink, but buy me dinner and pay my way in and I will take you.
Okay. You will take me. Yes.
So Barbara is doing her shower show and mm-hmm. the waitress comes over wearing a tuxedo shirt, a suspender leotard. This is the 90s, remember?
Yeah.
Suspender leotard, super shiny tights and pumps that look beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And she put her tray down on our table. And I turned and I started talking to her.
Mm-hmm.
And about 5 minutes in the conversation, because she wasn't going to be taking any orders, the Barbara mm-hmm. Dare shower show was going on. She said, "Why aren't you watching the show?" I said, "Because you are much more attractive to me than the person who is up there on the stage, not leaving any imagination for me."
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I understand that. I felt like when I moved from doing more, like working more on the porn side to working as an escort, I actually liked the, like, escort aesthetic is a little more, like, does leave more to the imagination. And that felt more comfortable to me. But also, I'm kind of an introvert and I like the one-on-one interactions. And that feels like almost like it, similar to what you're talking about, because I don't like being the center of attention and I don't like going to strip clubs at all, but I don't like going to strip clubs because I feel like there's something, like, I all support for strippers, but like, I can't go because often, especially if I'm sitting anywhere near, like, they feel like they need to come and talk to the women. And I'm like, I don't want to be a part of your show. I want to disappear into the background. I don't want, like, to be a part of this, like, in the center of attention sort of thing. But so I can understand that.
I want to talk about the podcast because you have done many podcasts. You mentioned Peep Show.
Mm-hmm.
I think you had one there in the middle that went on with another partner.
I did On the Horizon with a mm-hmm. W. I did that with Melrose Michaels. I did the first two seasons and then she kind of took it from there. I just got busy with other things. And so, and it's changed because we had a lot of the two seasons that I was on, we had a lot of guests and from various parts of the sex industry. And then when I left, she shifted it a little bit to more like business advice for content creators. And mm-hmm. so that's, which makes sense because that's what she does, you know, so she kind of took it in a Melrose direction. And then I also did only four episodes of a sex industry book club, which I really loved the idea of. And we read four different books written by sex workers or about the sex industry. And that was very fun. But it was a lot to, like, you have to read a book and promote. It was just a whole thing that I was like, I don't think I knew what I was getting into. So now I've settled on this new one. And Monday is the fourth. Or I have no idea when you're putting this episode out. But as of today, Monday is going to be the fourth episode.
This question's literally out of left field. So with all the interviews you've done, is there one kind of sex worker that's more interesting to talk to than another? Meaning, is a dominatrix more interesting than an escort, or is a stripper more interesting than a cam model? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I think that that's a really good question. I feel like there is so many different facets of the sex industry, and I feel like they cater to different types of personalities. And I can't really answer that because, like, I find people interesting and I find their stories interesting. So when people are, I want to know why they're into what they're into. So, like, for example, like, I'm not into camming but I'm not an exhibitionist and I am kind of shy. I like one-on-one interactions, but I don't want to talk to 200 people. It just kind of freaks me out. So, like, that wasn't really my thing, but I'm so interested in the people who, like, make that their thing and can, like, thrive in that. I'm like, what are you doing that I can't do? But what I will say is that before I became an escort and I was doing a lot of phone sex and camming and content creation, when I would have escorts on the show, I remember thinking, oh, what they're saying makes a lot of sense to me. Like, because I feel like different personalities, like, track into different things. So people who like to be the center of attention, you know, who are very comfortable with working a crowd will go into things like stripping or cam modeling or something that requires that. People who are pretty techie will get into, like, content creation, and that's, I'm not very techie. And then people who are a little, who like one-on-one interactions will either go into, like, phone sex or go into escorting. And the escorts, like, just in terms of, like, how they talked about the other forms of sex work, because I feel like most sex workers will try all the things until they find what makes sense to them. You know, the way that they talked about what they didn't like about camming or what they didn't like about doing porn were, like, the same things that I felt. And then I was like, oh, I bet I would like being an escort because what they're saying, like, tracks with how I think about things. And that turned out to be true. And I think it was really through my interviews. I mean, I probably would have come to that by myself anyway. But it was through my interviews where I was like, I get why people like this, but this is not where my skill set is. Or I understand why people like this, but it's not really, I don't like it, but cool for that, you know? Mm-hmm. But then when I talked to, like, escorts and people who were doing full service work, I was like, yeah, that makes sense to me. Like, I am somebody who's very, like, in touch with my own body, who doesn't feel like, who doesn't find it difficult to use it in the way that we do in full service work, who likes to meet people and who really likes to dig, like, deep into, like, why are you here and what do you want and how do we create this experience together? And it's been great. Like, my only wish is that I moved out of online and went into in-person earlier because it was a much better fit and things just kind of clicked together much better when I made that transition. But yeah, I wouldn't say that I find them more interesting. Like, I find everybody interesting, but I found people who were doing escorting to make the most, like, to be the most like me in personality. I love talking to DOMs because they're like the opposite of me.
Like, I was they going do, to ask you.
Yeah, they do one-on-one work too, but it's like, I am not a DOM, like in any way. And I think it would be fun to be a DOM, but like, I just don't have it in me. I mean, I worked on Night Flirt for years, and on Night Flirt, it tracks like so many subs. And so like, I did fake DOMing on the telephone, and, but I'm like the nicest DOM on like, the planet, you know, people would be like, oh, you could be mean. And I'm like, oh yeah, I don't do mean. Would do that. So I think it's really interesting. I think it's really neat, and I like the gender subversion, but I just don't have like the personality for it. And I know that I do some sensual doming, and I have to say I actually do a lot of mommy doming, and that's totally different. It's different for me because it's usually very like sensual, and it's like a caretaking doming, and I know how to caretake. That's not a hard role for me. So I like the mommy dom clients, and I take those in person too. So
I think the thing that has surprised me the most in doing these shows is that when I interview a pro dom, you know that 80, 90% of the world probably thinks that they're an awful person. How could you possibly want to beat on somebody? Or how can you humiliate this person?
Yeah. I don't think that. I just can't do it.
And what I've found is pretty much without exception, they are the nicest people I've ever met. And they do massively kind things for people.
Yeah.
That are sometimes things that other people would say would be the meanest thing you could ever do to somebody. Like I remember when I had a dom give me a massive amount of impacts, and I didn't think I was going to make it through. And when I did, I found myself at work 2 weeks later going, I can't do that. Oh, wait a minute. I can.
Yeah.
And that was one of the kindest things that had ever been done for me.
Yeah. I love stories like that. Yeah.
So I talk a lot about that in my Kindness and Other Kinks class, which I'm happy to have been doing. We'll have some coming up in April, and one back in the month of February. So I've really been enjoying doing that.
But she infused you with confidence in your own ability.
Yeah, and made me realize that I'm stronger than I thought I was.
Yeah.
Pretty darn cool.
It is cool.
We'll take a break and be back with more with Jesse Sage, writer, podcaster, all around wonderful person. When we come back, it's Authentically Kinky, presented by Dating Kinky and powered by Clips for Sale.
Authentically Kinky is the official podcast of FetishCon. Join us for the largest trade show in fetish in 2024. It's in St. Petersburg, Florida, August 8th through 11th, and you can get all the information at fetishcon.com. If you enjoy what you are hearing, please support the show. You can support the program financially by going to the Support the Show link at AuthenticallyKinky.com. And if you want to help us online, please take the time to subscribe and give us a rating and review on Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. It really does make a difference.
Hey, did you know that there's a one-of-a-kind matchmaking service for cuckolding and female-led relationships? Venus Connections is a private service for single men and single women who want a loving, cuckolding relationship. And now there's a new separate FLR program, too. There's no scrolling through profiles or sharing photos with members. It's totally private. And the dates are blind dates, too. Included in the program is a 3-week course and an interview with me. So join now at venusconnections.com and use the code Top Tier 2024 for 40% off the top 1% membership. That's venusconnections.com. Make 2024 the year that you get the relationship of your dreams.
Hopeless for love and a unique adventure.
He's just a little too vanilla.
A mansion sitter to the celebs lands a fresh gig for a mysterious client.
Where is it? It's the freaking boondocks out here.
Cut off from the outside world.
I can't hear you. You're cutting out.
Menaced by a mysterious presence. And introduced to a new reality.
Look at all this cool bondage stuff.
The Assignment. Watch this series now at gemweathers.com.
If you want to catch episodes of The Old What Women and Other Wonderful Humans Want or any of Authentically Kinky's previous shows, you can find links to them all at AuthenticallyKinky.com. This is Authentically Kinky, presented by Dating Kinky. And here, once again, is your host, John, or as we like to call them, Hi There, Catsuit.
Welcome back to the program, joined by Jesse Sage, the host of When We're Not Hustling. And you've also written for Hustler. How did that happen?
You know, that's a good question. I've been in Hustler twice, like in a photo spread, which is also weird. Like, you're asking me if I thought, did I expect anything? I did not expect to have a spread in Hustler, in one of the top three magazines. You know, I was interviewed for an article about phone sex, and then they were like, oh, do you have any pictures? And because my partner's a photographer, we did a whole photo shoot of me like talking on the phone for them and sent that in. And that became like the picture. Like, there were several pictures. And the funny thing about this is my cat, speaking of cats, photobombed the picture. And while I'm lying on the ground talking on the phone, the cat comes and lies next to me. And so my cat is in Hustler.
Yes.
We kind of sent that picture along to the editors like, oh, here, and thought it was funny. And then they picked that one, which was so fun. So I love the fact that my cat's in Hustler. So when I got to know them, when I was a different writer was interviewing me and putting me in there, he connected me with the editor of the online magazine, and I think I wrote for them 5 or 6 times and then got busy with other writing. But that was a really cool experience. And they gave me fun assignments. Like, I did something on humiliation, actually, and I interviewed some clients who really like humiliation. I did something on phone sex. I did something on the joys of anal sex. And I wrote in that one about having anal sex with my partner on our wedding night. And and so they think that's very funny. They're like, you wrote about the sex we had on our wedding night in Hustler. I was like, how romantic is that? So romantic. It's for the world. Which is very funny, because the other day I was writing something and it was going to go in the city paper. And I said to them, like, how do you feel about the fact that I wrote that in there? And they're like, I guess this is what I signed up for. I think because I said something and I was talking about the Shibari experience and I wrote about that. And I was talking about what it was like for me. And I said in there that my partner who was there said that I sounded like I was coming, and I wasn't like aware that I was emoting like that. Yeah, so I don't know. It was a fun experience. Apparently it was kind of orgasmic. That's so says PJ. they were like, I didn't expect you to write that I said that. But yeah, so I think, I wrote some stuff about camming and just different topics. So it was really fun. So I think I might hit them up again. I should write again for them.
You brought it back. You talked about your experience in Shibari in suspension.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about it.
So The interesting thing about this piece that I wrote about that is that when I was approached to write that, I said to the editor, I was like, I can write that because I know a lot of people who do it, so I can interview folks, but like, I think I have too much ADHD to like sit for that, and I certainly have too much ADHD to like learn to do that. It looked from the outside to me like very tedious, you know? So I was like, I don't think I can do this. But I'll talk to people. And then I interviewed 6 people about their experiences. Some were riggers, some were bottoms, some were psychologists, just like a range of people to talk about rope bondage. And all of them were so effusive about how wonderful these experiences were for them and the funny thing about it was that almost all of them, like 4 out of 6 of them, mentioned that they're neurodivergent, and that part of the reason that they like it is because it quiets like the outside world and makes them concentrate. And so like some, they're like, oh, well, I like it because I have ADHD. And I was like, what? That's why I said I wasn't going to like it. Like, tell me more about that. You know? And so I was really, my curiosity was really piqued by the way that they talked about very deliberate thing. So actually the tops and the bottoms talked about it differently, and that makes sense. But like the tops, we were talking about the fact that because they had to be so tied in, I didn't mean to actually use that pun, but because they had to be so like tied into how the bottoms were feeling with everything, that they had to have the movements and the ties like kind of memorized, and it had to be so rote because they needed to be paying so close attention to what the bottoms were feeling and thinking. And so I thought that was really interesting. It was almost like white noise in that way, or brown noise, like it takes away, it occupies one part of your brain so that you can focus on what's going on. And then the bottoms that I were talking about how having pressure points like all over your body makes you like focus on those points. And so the way that they talked about it, I was like, okay, now you've convinced me that like I need to try this out. And I'm kind of submissive anyways. I lean that way. I don't have a chance to like be submissive very often because of my job, but like if given my druthers, I would pillow princess like all the time. So I know I'm not supposed to say that. Like people have bad connotations, but I don't care. I would pillow princess all the time. So so when they were talking about it, I was like, I really think that I want to experience this because I'm a sensation seeking person. I like intense sensations, and some of the people that I talked to describe themselves like that. Like one of the people, they were like, I'm autistic and I'm a sensation seeking autistic person, and I'm not autistic, but I have some of those like traits. And so I just asked one of my interviewees who's a switch, and the reason that I wanted them to do it was out of the 3 people who rigged that I talked to, they were like, I've done both, and so I know what the experience of bottoming is, so I like know what people are trying to get out of that. And I was like, cool, then I want to experience this with you. So I asked them, I was like, will you come to my house and do this? I will pay you. I want to have this like experience before I write this article. And they came over, and I had no idea what to expect besides what the people in the interview told me. And a lot of them told me that it was painful, but it was like what you were describing with impact. But you have to, like, if you work through the pain, then you have like a euphoria that goes along with it. I did not find it that painful, but I think that the rigor was, and I'm a heavy person, but like the rigor was really good. And the way that they did it was really comfortable, but I remember being like pulled up and suspended and like moved around in a couple of different ways. And it felt very fast to me. And then they were like, okay, well, I'm going to put you down now. And having things go from being like so tight to almost, it felt like melting on the floor, like the ropes become slack and your body almost feels like it like puddles onto the floor, was this like really, it was a euphoric experience. And then I was like, wow, that was fast. And they were like, and both them and my partner were like, I think that was like half an hour. And I was like, what? Like, it didn't feel that way. Mm-hmm. It felt like time was like in some other form. And then they, we had this, because we were going to take photos for my article, we had this chase in the photo studio that's my partner's office. And they were like, I could tie you to this chair. And I was like, okay, that sounds fun, because I'm not done with this yet. Like, I was like, I'm like a little kid. I'm like, again.
Yes.
I want more. And so they like tied me to the chair and then started like, and then they were funny because they were like, I didn't ask. Now they have, like, now that they're not suspending me, they're like trying to figure out what they're going to do with me once I'm like tied in this chair. And so they're like taking their nails and like scratching them up my legs and like giving me all these different sensations. And then they're like, I forgot to ask, can I bite you? And I was like, yeah, bite me. Do whatever you want. Now I'm in it. Like, and so it was like a great experience. I really liked, I just liked handing over like control to somebody and then having them like give me all these sensations without me like doing anything. So it was, I thought it was really great. I would 100% do it again. Like, if they came tonight, I would do it.
It is such a beautiful feeling. And when I've had the opportunity to, and it hasn't been a lot of times, honestly,
mm-hmm.
but when I have had the opportunity of being tied up,
mm-hmm.
the physical hypnosis of the rope going across the body.
Yeah.
And then when the person takes it off the right way too.
Yeah. Oh. It's a very sensual full body experience. And I liked it because they pull it tighter and then you have, I don't know, the whole thing was really amazing.
I've always said that the greatest freedom I ever felt when I was totally bound and unable to escape.
Mm-hmm. Do you like other more intense things like caging or mummification or?
Love mummification.
Okay.
I love latex vac beds and cubes.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And I have been lucky enough to be put in a double layer latex cat suit.
Oh, wow.
Which was inflated.
Oh my gosh.
The outside was inflated.
Okay.
And it was inflated through the boobs, which I loved.
That's fun.
And then put inside a very strict leather mummy bag and strapped wow. into it with hand pieces where my hands couldn't even touch each other. They were almost in the suspended animation.
Wow.
And I could not move a muscle. I could not even wiggle my toes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the most safe feeling I'd ever had in my life.
Yeah. You know, I interviewed a psychologist for this piece and I loved what she said, which I hadn't really thought about before, but she was like, we came into this world like tied to another person and bound by them. And I was like, fuck, that's profound. You know, that there's like something about that I hadn't thought about. But as you were describing that, I was thinking about the fact that like, I consider myself claustrophobic. Like I don't like small spaces, but there's something about kink that allows you to explore that because you know that there's somebody else watching out for you. Like I remember a friend of mine, he went to Asia, I can't remember where he was, maybe Japan, and rented one of those hotels that's almost like a drawer that you go in and like slept in that. And I was like, no, like I would not do that in a million years. But being tied up was like so different than that because there's somebody there who's paying attention to what's happening and who will like take you out. And that does feel very different.
When I had a scene this past weekend, I was put in a leather straitjacket and basically strapped to a medical table straight up
mm-hmm.
and had a gas mask on.
Mm-hmm.
But when I wasn't getting any touch or could not see who I was with, I'd start panicking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then as soon as somebody touched, I'd be fine again.
Yeah.
And it's the same way in vac beds, because the vac bed at the Sanctum here locally in Cincinnati is one that covers the face. You have a tube, mm-hmm. that's it, but it covers the whole face. And people are like, I couldn't do that. I'm too claustrophobic. I said, if you have someone who is simply laying their hand on you,
mm-hmm.
you can get through it, because it's so much different.
Yeah. 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 That's so interesting.
It's a beautiful feeling.
Yeah.
I would say that where can you find your podcast? But it's always available wherever podcasts, because you never know who's picked up your podcast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Do you have a special place that you like to send people to?
No, I mean, I host it on Libsyn, so you can see it on nothustlingpod.libsyn.com, but it's on Apple, it's on Spotify, it's on iHeartRadio, it's on all the places. So I don't care. I just like people to listen to it.
Well, I listened to one the other day and absolutely thoroughly enjoyed it, and look forward to especially hearing the one with your mom.
Which one did you listen to?
Oh, it's been such a weekend.
I shouldn't have asked you that.
I think it was the last one you had
with anarchism.
Yes.
Oh yeah, I love Lucy. That was great.
I love Lucy. That's a good show.
I love Lucy. Mm-hmm.
Jesse, it is so great to have you on the show again. It has been quite a few years since we originally mm-hmm. visited. I think we were probably in the middle of COVID and all that.
Probably.
But it is so wonderful just to see how life continues to be amazing for you, because you do such amazing things. And I really appreciate that from you, and am honored to know you.
Oh, thank you. Likewise. I'm excited for your rebranding and your new show. Your old show that's a new show.
Very much enjoyed having Jesse on the show. Just a lovely woman. And I am so happy to know her, because she genuinely believes that sex workers need to get positive attention. And this new show of hers is just absolutely fantastic in the way that it does that. It's a lot like our show, and I'm pretty proud of that.
Coming up on the next edition of Authentically Kinky, presented by Dating Kinky and powered by Clips for Sale.
She's the kindest content creator you'll ever meet, with fetishes that you haven't even imagined. We talk with Madeline Ray, an amazing content creator and a member of the Ultra Girl universe. Madeline Ray, next time.
Join us for that new show next Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Before we go, special thanks to all of our partners, especially Clips for Sale. Until next time, I'm John, also known as Hi There Catsuit. I thank you very, very much for joining us on this journey, as I am authentically kinky. I hope I've earned the privilege of your time, and I remind you to always remember consent and to love each other always.
Joining us on the show. You can get all the information on the podcast by visiting authenticallykinky.com. You can find our theme song on Spotify. It's called Freya by Masana, and you can find links to their work on our website as well.
This has been a presentation of Dating Kinky, built by kinksters for kinksters, poly, queer, trans folk, and anyone not quite vanilla. And it's free.